Hi, this is Craig Valentine, host of Early to Rise Radio. Have you ever wanted to become wealthier, healthier, wiser, or just have more time to appreciate the finer things in life? On this show, we reveal what high performers are doing every day to be more successful without sacrificing their personal lives. Early to Rise Radio is sponsored by the Perfect Day Formula. Get your free copy of this game-changing success guide at freeperfectdaybook.com. Now let's get started with today's show.
We've all heard stories of overcoming adversity on the path to success, but few of us know the kind of physical devastation that Sam Robson suffered. Our guest on the podcast today, Sam endured a series of very painful physical traumas that left him backed against a wall. They might have destroyed his life, but he didn't let them. Jeff Steen here on the mic again for this episode of ETR Radio, and what an episode this one is. Sam shares some amazing, vulnerable things with me during our interview, all of which can serve as inspiration to entrepreneurs who need just a little extra push to make their business goals a reality. But our conversation is certainly about more than just career and business. There's a lot of wisdom that Sam shares about what really matters in our day-to-day lives and how these should be the guiding lights of our dreams, our priorities, and our lives, both individually and together. Before we get to these incredible stories and insight, though, I want to remind you, of course, that ETR Radio is brought to you by the Perfect Day Formula. Grab your free copy of this blueprint to success and living the life of your dreams at freeperfectdaybook.com. All right, now let's get to my interview with copywriter, fitness guru, screenwriter, and all-around inspiration, Sam Robson. Hey there, ETR listeners. Welcome back for another episode of ETR Radio. Jeff Steen on the mic again today, interviewing a copywriter who's been working with us at ETR. He's got a phenomenal journey. It's both instructive and entertaining, interesting. Maybe entertaining is not the right word, but it's certainly very instructive. Sam Robson on the line with us today. Sam, thanks for joining us.
Happy to be here, Jeff.
So you have, like I said, a very, very interesting story. And I did a little bit of digging and I got some questions. I'd love to give our readers some background, because if there's anything that they can relate to or learn from, it can be very helpful for them. So let's take it back, go to the Wayback Machine here a little bit and talk about college, because you had what I would say is a pretty typical college experience. You were at Union College, is that right? And studied English and philosophy?
That's correct.
So why, given where you are right now, what were you thinking when you went to college and you're like, I want to study English and philosophy? Was it just subject matter interest then, or did you have sort of a long-term game plan?
It's a little bit twofold, actually. So, my dad was a psychiatrist and a med school professor. My mom was a family lawyer and mediator. Story was always a huge part of our family. I was always read to growing up. I would always watch movies with my family, and we would always break them down afterwards. And I really, really loved story. At the same time, I was always told, more or less by my parents, basically you should become a doctor, you should become a lawyer. The professions are the most secure, the most stable, jobs that you could have. And I always enjoyed English in high school. It was my strongest subject. When I entered Union, I was actually pre-med. That did not last very long. And then I actually transferred to kind of a pre-law track. All of those classes came really naturally to me. So I minored in political science. I took every law class under the sun. I worked for the Connecticut Children's Law Center on my breaks. I was the research fellow for the law professor. I was really, really good at it. And I couldn't stand it. It was not for me. So about 3 months before I was set to graduate, I had an idea for a TV pilot. And I woke up one morning and I spent about 30 seconds looking up screenplay format online. I'd never read or written one before. And about 3 hours later, I had a 30, 40 page rough draft of this pilot. And I called my parents that night and I said, look, Mom and Dad, I love you guys, but I'm moving to LA to become a screenwriter. With or without your support. That was not exactly taken well at first. So originally I was going to go to law school, and then my English degree ended up helping me there with with screenwriting and story development. I was a story development consultant in Los Angeles for a few years. And it helps me with copywriting today. So it's kind of come full circle in a way.
Yeah, no, I could see that. I'm just wondering, I mean, it's pretty typical for somebody. I was that way too, towards the end of college. You're still a big dreamer. You know, you're going to follow your dreams, whether your family likes it or not. But how did you successfully transition from college with an English degree and just a screenplay to a job in Hollywood as a screenwriter? I feel like a lot of people who go out to Hollywood with these big dreams, big ideas, it flops, and then they have to turn around and walk away with their tail between the legs. So how did you make it work out there?
Right. Yeah, that's a great question. So there is actually an article, I believe it was published in Business Insider several years ago, about the most difficult and the most competitive professions in the United States. And believe it or not, becoming a professional athlete was number three. And screenwriter, or I think creative writer, was number two.
I believe that.
Oh, great. Smooth sailing ahead of me, obviously. So I actually started at an internship at a literary management company based at Paramount Pictures. I started a week after, about 10 days after my college graduation. It was about 2 weeks, but about 9 or 10 days after I graduated, I moved out to LA. So I was an intern there, and they train you on how to be an above industry standard story analyst, because you need to understand all the different nuances and the pieces of cinematic story in order to craft one.
Sure.
And then I moved along through that program really well and really quickly, and I was accepted into their I guess you'd call their client training program. So it was essentially after that, from about September through to December, was essentially a master's in story development and screenwriting condensed into about 3 months. I did it in about two and a half.
Wow.
And then I was brought on as the internship program coordinator. So then I started training the people who were where I was, and I was writing and working on my own projects at that time. I was then running and training the more advanced kind of master's-esque program that I had just graduated from about a couple months after that. And then I was working as a story consultant for a startup game application company. And then all the while I was living with one of my best friends from college. He and his family live about 40 minutes outside of LA. So I was staying with them, you know, while I was getting my feet under me.
Right.
Fast forward a bit, I had, you know, different jobs. I was a story development associate and a junior writer for a startup online TV network. Then in, I guess it was April of 2015, I was part of a team that helped put together a startup production company. And then I was driving for Postmates about 30 hours a week on top of that. And then I was writing on top of that. And I met someone through that company that we were building who to this day is one of my dearest friends. And he is a former literary agent and producer. And we just connected on so many levels. And he and I started working together. So we started becoming consulting producers on projects. And then I just kind of kept my network going and building from there. I had one project that was in development with an executive at Sony Pictures. And then there was another project. One project that I consulted on was actually in theaters in May. So that was kind of cool. I'd say at the end of 2016, my life started taking a turn. And story started as important as it was to me, as important as it still is to me. There were much bigger forces at play, and a lot of other things in my life that started to, I wouldn't say make story fall by the wayside, but it took it from the priority to kind of more of a background concern, if you will.
Yeah, actually, that's because I wanted to ask about that. I mean, the way you paint that experience in Hollywood, granted, you had some rough times. You were working like hell, crazy hours. But all of these new contacts you were making, these projects you were working on, it sounds like you had your hand in growing some startup concepts that were very promising and exciting. So being a part of all of that and being sort of the creative energy behind that, huge. So the next step, if I'm not mistaken, is sort of moving to health and fitness, where you wanted to have more of an impact on the growth of individuals. So what was it about all of that exciting creative work that you were doing that wasn't leaving you fulfilled? What was the missing piece?
Yeah, that's a great question, Jeff. So I've been very intensely and intensively studying health, fitness, nutrition, wellness, I'd say probably since about 2007, 2008, really in earnest, kind of like next level type of stuff since about 2010. And story and health and fitness are probably, next to my family and my friends, the two most integral parts of my life. And I remember at the time I was, people look at me like I'm crazy when I was doing this and when I say this now, but I was actually training for Air Force Special Ops. I'm not in the Air Force. I deeply respect and appreciate what they do, but I wanted to challenge myself. So I was in the Air Force Special Ops Active Duty Readiness Program as my workout. So I was going to this one gym that had the stuff that I needed about 6 days a week. And I kept seeing, and it's one of the most populated gyms in foot traffic, probably in the country. This gym was in Hollywood. And day after day, I would see the trainers mistraining their clients. And I was like, okay, I'm just a form snob. I'm an exercise execution snob. This is all it is. And I saw that in one way or another, one shape or form. I believe it was Monday through Friday, 5 days in a row. I said, okay, I'm going to go home. When I come back after the weekend, everything's going to be great. And I remember walking, you had to go up a large flight of stairs to get into the gym because it was in downtown Hollywood. I remember walking in on a Monday morning, and there was a trainer working with a client. And the client was down and to the right of the trainer. It was a great exercise, horrific form. She was destroying her knees on every single rep. So the client was down and to the right. I could picture this like it was yesterday. And the trainer was looking up and to the left, not even looking at the client. Oh, great job. Yeah, keep going. Yeah, awesome. Yeah. Keep going. And I'm like, he's getting paid to help her and he's hurting her. I said, that's it. Enough's enough. And so about a week or so later, I had actually, this is a side note here. I had injured my shoulder about 2 days before I went home to Hartford, Connecticut, to spend the holidays with my family. And I reached out to one of my best friends, Mike Basler, who was also a trainer, also in the entertainment industry. And I said, dude, I think we need to start a business. Like, cause he was seeing some of the inefficiencies as well in his training career. And that was it. And so then we kind of started putting together this personal training business. And then in early spring of 2017, that transitioned into A-List Health and Fitness because we were working with some celebrity type clientele. We started transitioning. We were still doing in-person training and health coaching, but we started building that into a digital information business. So building out eBooks and audiobooks and video courses on training and health and fitness and stuff like that. And during that whole process, I had an event that dramatically changed the course of my life forever. Not to be dramatic, but it was one of those events that you can't go through something like that and not have it change you.
Are you, because I think I know where you're going with this, but before you get there, because it's huge and I want you to talk about it, but I have two questions about how you made that transition to the business there with your friend. My first question is, you know, you talked about the hesitation, we'll put it that way, that your parents had when you slipped off to Hollywood to pursue that career goal, that dream job. how were they processing this new transition to health and fitness? Had they finally come behind you to support you no matter what, or were they still like, what the heck is Sam doing?
Yeah. So my parents are, they're my best friends. They were very supportive. I've gotten closer with my parents as I've gotten older. In the first real major fight we ever had, and only real major fight we ever had, was when I told them I'm moving out to Hollywood to be a screenwriter. Mm. And I remember the day that I left to move from the East Coast to the West Coast, I said, well, what changed, made you guys change your mind? Like, how come you guys are so supportive now? And for lack of a better term, my dad said, well, my dad basically, I'll try and censor myself here. he said, you displayed a certain type of fortitude that I was like, well, if he's going to do that, he's going to make it.
I see.
If he can go against, you know, what our plans are for him like that with such conviction and passion, there's no doubt that he's going to make it. And also my dad almost, became an English professor at one point. So he has this deep love for story as well, and kind of love that I was going into story as a career. But in those first few months of kind of building these health and fitness businesses, I was actually doing story stuff at the same time. I was still, working as a story development consultant. I still had projects. I had multiple projects that were in development. It was definitely the top two most promising, moves that I had actually in my story development, in my screenwriting career. I had one project I was developing with someone who was highly, highly, highly connected. And this project had a lot of legs. I was really excited about it. And then this other project that I mentioned that was in development with an executive at Sony Pictures at the time, that was in development during that period as well. So I kind of wanted to create this sort of dream life for myself where I could, I could serve people through story and help them grow and learn from these stories, and also help other story professionals make their stories better and get them to the bigger small screen and serve people that way. And I can also serve people through health and fitness and literally help them change their lives. So initially I wanted to have both of those pieces come together. But my parents, they know that I've been studying health and fitness, like I said, intensely and intensively for a very long time. They know I'm very passionate about it. And, my dad as a doctor growing up always said, the greatest thing you can do in life is you can help people for a living. And I told him, I said, Dad, isn't this funny how, you know, I thought I wanted to be a doctor going into college. Now I am helping people with their health and helping people get healthy for a living, just in a different way. And they were very supportive of that. And they were also supportive of the fact that I was kind of teaching myself all these things. I started to teach myself copywriting, and I started studying marketing and business, I guess somewhat informally on my own. And they became supportive of that.
That's awesome. Yeah, not all parents would be, but it sounds like they're very open-minded and were able to discern the qualities that would make you successful beyond the job specifically. I'm also curious, as you started, you said it was A-List, was the name of A-List Fitness, something like that?
Yeah. A-List Health and Fitness.
And you were working with some higher profile folks in the Hollywood area. How did you, because this is key for a lot of our listeners who are trying to build out their own networks. So I'm wondering if you have any insight on how to build those networks. Was it just a referral situation for you? How did you get started on that, making those contacts?
Right. So client acquisition, and this was before I really started diving deep into marketing and learning a lot of the nuances of client acquisition and stuff that I do now. I'll be honest, it was hard. It was really hard.
Yeah, I imagine.
We knew it wasn't going to be easy, but at the same time, it was a lot harder than we thought it would be. So the first client we ever had actually was someone who I knew at that gym in Hollywood, who is an actor and a model, and we kind of become friends because, you know, we were at that gym every day. And he was in good shape, but his physique wasn't where he needed it to be for the types of auditions that he was landing.
Right.
And so I kind of just pitched him on what we do. And then we had a consultation session with this actor, and then my friend Mike and myself. And then we started working with him, and that was our first client. And then started working with a friend of mine who I was actually connected to in this literary management group that I started working with when I first moved to Hollywood. And then he also was one of the, he was the founder or co-founder of this production company that I was a part of the executive team on. And then he referred us to, I think, one or two people. And then Mike had a big break at one point where he was given a guest spot on a show on Nickelodeon. And the star of that show was a former Division I athlete. And he was in the best shape of anyone that we started with. But again, his physique wasn't where he wanted or needed it to be. And so we started working with him. And then another actor from that show I started working with. And then believe it or not, through a post on Craigslist, we started working with a recording artist with hundreds of thousands of views and tens of thousands of fans on YouTube. And then from there, through another contact of Mike's, we actually started training an esports team. So a professional video game team that lived and trained in Justin Bieber's old house in the Hollywood Hills. So a lot of it is you know, kind of who you know. And just building those relationships. And it kind of comes back to one of the core tenets of business, which, right, which is, you know, the higher level service or the higher quality of service that you provide, the more reciprocity kind of comes back your way.
Right.
So, you know, you get out what you put in.
And then I think, you know, one of the things that Craig preaches too is not just building those relationships and establishing trust, which it sounds like you were doing, and leveraging the contacts you already had, but it's not being afraid to ask, to make the ask instead of assuming that they'll just come to you. And I don't know how that figures in specifically to your network building in that business, but I would imagine that at some point in those relationships, there was an ask. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, there was. And those, some of these relationships were, and I guess working relationships were different than others. We didn't always feel great about, we didn't like asking for referrals right away, because we wanted to build, you know, trust, and we wanted to actually deliver value to our clients first.
Absolutely.
But then I learned it almost comes across, I wouldn't say worse isn't necessarily the word to use, but it's actually can be less effective to wait for referrals further down the line, as opposed to bringing it up at the very beginning and say, look, our business relies on referrals. So I'm going to provide and deliver the absolute highest quality service I possibly can. All I ask in exchange from you is to refer me or us to one or two people that you think we can really add value to, whose lives you think we can make an impact on. And that was a really big realization for me, because I have changed and transformed tremendously in the last year and a half. But at the time, even though I'm you know, a very sociable person, I like to think that I'm a very personable guy, asking people for those sorts of things felt incredibly uncomfortable for me. So yeah. I kind of just wanted to put it off for as long as humanly possible. But the reality is, when you bring it up at the outset, people are often much more receptive, and it works much more effectively, you know, than were you to wait until, let's say, 2-3 months into the working relationship.
That's good advice. Good takeaways there. I just want to make sure that we touched on that, because, you know, people do struggle with that. And we may get into that a little bit more here down the road in the interview. But I apologize. I derailed you right as we were getting to this huge piece of your story. So I want to come back to that. So yeah, I'm just painting a little bit of the backstory again so people are on the same track. You were working in Hollywood, things were building up, decided to switch gears a little bit, even though you were still, you know, working on some of those projects, start the fitness business with your friends, and then what happened?
What happened? So like I said, I had injured my shoulder, and I was off my shoulder, but still training, just not with my upper body at all, for about 2 months. And I was about 4 or 5 days away from like complete recovery on my shoulder. When this was the day before the Super Bowl, my parents had just gotten into town to visit. I'll never forget. And I microfractured my knee, my tibia, in two places, and I tore my calf. And at the time, I thought, "Oh, this is all good. This is actually awesome," because I had had knee pain for about 4 or 5 years leading up to that. And I thought, "This is great. Mm-hmm. I get this opportunity to challenge myself. I get this opportunity to grow that uninjured people don't get. This is fantastic." Because I had been reading a book that made a really big impact on my life called Hardwiring Happiness. By Rick Hansen, about experience dependent neuroplasticity and how we can rewire our brain towards a positivity bias. That's a whole other conversation for another
time. Right.
But I was really excited. And, you know, I'm a health coach, right? I'm a student of this stuff. So I know exactly what to eat to maximize recovery and expedite the healing process and all these other supplementation protocols and other alternative treatment protocols and all this stuff, right? And I'm doing this stuff and it's getting worse. So I was just limping, and then I was on a cane for like a week or two, and then I was off the cane for a few days, and then it was too painful. So I had to go back to the cane. And then I went from cane to crutches, and then I was on crutches for at least 2 months. And I was like, something's really wrong here, because not only had I lost about 60 to maybe 70% of the muscle mass in my left leg, which is, even when you're not using the leg, is a lot in only three months. But my foot was, unless it was elevated above my head, was purple. It was swollen to twice the size of my right foot. I couldn't bend my toes. I couldn't put shoes on. And even with crutches, I was in the most excruciating pain of my life just trying to touch my toes to the floor. So,
and you hadn't gone to a doctor at all up until this
point? I had gone to a doctor who had told me about the microfractures and the minor calf tear.
Right.
But those, and I had got MRIs and ultrasounds, but those should have healed within 6 to 10 weeks. So, something was off here, and I had no idea what it was. And so I went to see another doctor. I said, "Oh, I can't really help you. Go to this guy who is this sports medicine specialist." And that was a great experience. I say with sarcasm. He asked me what I was taking for my knee. So I listed like 8 or 9 like well-known, well-documented naturopathic supplements and medicines. He said, "Oh, well, so you're not taking anything." I said, "Excuse me?" He said, "Well, here in the Western world, we only like to take what works." And he prescribed something to me that would have just absolutely destroyed my intestines. And that's if you do it like a few times, too many in a week. And he wanted me to take this four times a day, 7 days a week for a month, threw the prescription in the trash. He found no structural damage in my knee. I won't say exactly what he said to me because I don't think it's appropriate, but he essentially said, "Yeah, you're being a baby. There's nothing wrong here." And I'm like, "Oh, this was incredibly helpful."
You had a swollen purple foot. And he's like, "There's nothing wrong."
Yeah. I won't use the exact language that he used.
Oh my God.
He essentially said that I was being a baby and I wasn't going hard enough in rehab. Needless to say, I was not thrilled with this individual.
Right.
And then 2 days later, May 4th, 2017 was a day that altered me. It altered my life and it altered my path. So I went to another orthopedic sports medicine specialist who seemed to be highly recommended, did a really thorough exam, like 30, 40 minutes. And he looks at me and he says, "You know, I've only seen this 4 or 5 times in my career." I said, "What?" He said, "You have CRPS, stands for complex regional pain syndrome, or RSD, reflexive sympathetic dystrophy." Those two names are synonymous. And it's an ultra rare neurological nerve condition. He said, "Your nerves have hijacked your brain. They're sending permanent pain signals to the pain receptors in your brain and your nerves. The blood vessels are constricting and dilating uncontrollably, and there's no cure." I said, "Okay." He said, "But you can't use the crutches anymore because that's just going to strengthen the neural pathways in your brain that say you can't walk, that say, you know, and I was like, well, he had me try and stand and I fell over. And he's like, trust me, you can walk. So I dropped the crutches and it was the most excruciating pain I will ever feel in my life. Some studies show that this is actually 3 times more painful than childbirth, except it's focused in one part of the body. And I could walk. I wouldn't call it walking because it was the most grotesque limp you've probably ever seen in your life. I needed to throw my hands forward just to get some movement in my leg. But I felt like my entire foot and leg up to above my knee was completely shattered. I was losing the use of my hands, which both felt like they were on fire. Oh, the foot felt like it was on fire at the same time because I had quote unquote irreversible nerve damage. And the doctor, the pain management specialist at that doctor's office, they never got back to me. The world's number one expert in CRPS is at UCLA. So I thought, great, it's about 40 minutes away. This is perfect. And I had all my paperwork and all the reports that said I was diagnosed with this condition sent over to that doctor's office. I spoke with people at the office and they never got back to me. And I talk with my mom very frequently. My mom's my best friend. So I talked to her at least 4 times a week, at least at the time I did. And we never FaceTimed. We never did video chats. We would always just talk on the phone. And I was talking to them about it and they weren't even convinced I had this thing. And I sent my mom a picture of my feet and she was like, okay, I got it now. She calls me and she said, we need to FaceTime right now. And she is in tears. I mean, she's bawling. And she's like, you need to see this. And it was, there were videos from that specialist at UCLA's, his site, his program. And there was a woman who was about 5-6 years older than me. She had had this condition for only about a couple of years. And to go on walks with her daughter, she had to use a motorized wheelchair. She couldn't brush her own teeth for a while. There's another woman who she couldn't be hugged. And if you even come near her, she feels like she's basically in a car accident and being stabbed, essentially. Because even just a tiny, because the nerves are so sensitive that just the tiniest little brush of air, it can feel like someone is just hammering your affected limb. And it was at that point, at 26, that I learned I was most likely, with the way things were going, I was on pace to probably be in a wheelchair for the rest of my life by about 29. And so this is coming from a guy who was, you know, I pride myself as being an athlete. I always push myself physically, you know, health and wellness is such an important and integral part of my life, fitness as well. And I remember sitting there on my couch and I just started sobbing. Like, life as I know it is over. This is it. You know, the universe is playing a cruel joke on me. And then I took a deep breath. I'll never forget what I told myself. I said, all right, Sam, you got 2 options here, dude. You can either lay down and take it. You can let this thing progress. You can let it dictate and ruin the rest of your life, or you can get up and fight. What are you going to do? And in that moment, I decided, forget the doctors, forget the research. I'm beating this thing. And through my own research and nutrition and supplementation and other, I guess you would call alternative health protocols, I actually healed myself without a doctor. And I retrained myself how to walk again without a physical therapist. Because at the time, yes, I could technically walk, but I couldn't really. It was basically my right leg. And then I had to throw my arms up and my left leg would kind of move a little bit without leaving the ground. And my brain literally didn't remember how to walk. So I did all of that on my own. And it was really a kind of couple month process. It was several months to kind of fully get those sensations out of my foot, the nerve pain. And then about, let's say, 3 weeks into that process, I suffered a grade 3 groin tear because I had lost so much muscle mass in my left leg. And then a month after that, re-injured the injured shoulder from December, and then had basically a string of injuries, mostly in my knee and also my shoulder in the last year since then as a result of that. And during that period, I said, you know, I love story and I always will. But the fact that I have beaten this thing on my own and that I have endured and come through this thing on the other side, I was put here to help people through health and fitness. I was put here for whatever reason to help people become the best and healthiest versions of themselves. And that became my mission. That became my path. That became my goal. And from that point on, everything has been really focused on that.
That is a phenomenal story that, I mean, I don't know who could relate to that. It's just such a rare, like you said, a rare, I don't even call it a disease, but a rare ailment that you suffered from and you came back from. One thing that struck me about this whole story is that we're sort of trained in Western culture to trust our doctors. And if a doctor says, especially several doctors say, you know, you're not getting past this, nothing we can do for you, that's the end. And we take that as gospel. But I'm wondering what it is about you that sets you apart from almost everybody else who would suffer something like this, such that you were able to push back that resounding no and decide for yourself that you were going to do what you can to beat it. What was it about you that made that possible?
I think there are probably a couple of different things. One is, so this real main injury, this start that set this all off, was in early February of 2017. And in July of 2016, I had gotten really sick. I thought I just had a stomach flu. And about 3 or 4 months later, I still felt as sick as I had in the beginning. And I went to the doctors and they ran every single blood test. They're like, oh, all the blood tests are negative. And the next step is they're like, well, that's probably stomach cancer. Well, it wasn't that. And they're like, well, there's nothing else we can do. And so I had to take it upon myself. And that was a 2-year process. But again, through my nutrition and through other, you know, alternative means and supplementation, had to kind of heal myself. And that was, like I said, that was a 2-year process. But I was about, I was about 8 to 10 months into having gotten sick when I was diagnosed with CRPS or RSD. And in addition to the knee injury and the being sick, I literally told myself on that day when I said, well, I'm going to beat this thing. I'm just going to get up and fight and beat it. I literally said to myself, I remember I was standing in my kitchen sink and I said, dude, you've been fighting for your health for the last like 10 months. What's a couple more? That was just kind of the natural reaction that I had. The other thing probably is that my dad has had Parkinson's disease since I was 5 years old. And I have witnessed firsthand what neurodegenerative conditions can do to people. And, you know, my dad was, 65 or so, or in his early 60s when he was diagnosed. And I was only 26. And I was like, I can't let that happen to myself because I know what it's done to my dad. And I just can't let that happen to me. And I can't have the people around me have to, quote unquote, deal with me. I can't have that happen. And so it was probably a combination of those two things that really drove me to just be like, dude, you don't really have an option here. Like, to me, there was no plan B. There was no option two, right? The choice is either get better or that's it. You don't really have a choice. And it was probably a combination of those two things, having kind of started to work through a condition that doctors couldn't even figure out what it was, with my dad's medical history, that really pushed me to just do whatever I needed to come through this thing on the other side.
There's just no question that it's both a heartbreaking story, but it's also really inspiring that you were able to look it in the face and take steps forward and make yourself better, essentially. But you had a unique set of circumstances that seemed to make that possible. So when you decided that your sort of mission thereafter was to help other people live healthy lives and to come back from things like this. How on earth do you teach that to somebody else who has not had the experiences that you had?
That's a good question. In one way, I shared this story with my clients because I was going through this while I was working with them, right? So, I started working with some of these bigger clients from, I believe it was like mid-August, kind of through, the winter, and then into the first couple of months, first few months of 2018. And I would share my story with them. And I, like I said, I've also suffered countless injuries since then. I'm probably a couple months away from recovery, being able to train like I used to for the first time in 2 years, probably by the end of October right now. So I was going through all these injuries at the same time that I was coaching and training my clients. So I also have the thing, I think a lot of health coaches and fitness coaches can relate to this, trainers as well. A lot of times I end up with what I would call friends. So they start as clients and then they become your very close friends because you're helping them with such an important part of their life and they're trusting you and you're spending all this time together. I became very close with a lot of my clients. So I would disclose a lot of this stuff to them.
Yeah.
I also would have some clients who, they didn't have the health and fitness background that I did necessarily. So, they didn't have the baseline or the foundation of health and fitness that I had built for myself. So whenever they were struggling, I would kind of use this to kind of kick them in the butt and say like, hey, look, if I can teach myself and retrain myself how to walk, if I can beat this, this incurable neurological condition, you know, at my age, you can do that extra set.
Right.
You can meet those nutritional goals for the week. And I would do that. There were a couple of clients in particular who I did that with a lot. And I think it, at least at the time, it worked pretty effectively because I'm essentially here saying, look, I've been through a whole hell of a lot worse than what you think you're going through right now. And I won and I beat it. Like you can overcome your obstacles too. Like it's nothing. And that's something that, it's very important to me. I think this story can really resonate with so many people, whether you're going through a health issue or a financial issue, job, career issue, family issue, personal issue of any kind. No matter what obstacles you have, just don't quit and you will be able to come through on the other side. And that's a story that I feel a personal responsibility to share with as many people as I can because, well, most people simply haven't gone through what I've been through. The story and the lessons from that are applicable to any situation and any obstacle that you could face in your life.
Well said. And actually to jump back on the timeline, you started leveraging some of that experience, a lot of your experience in the past, not just the physical devastations that you experienced, but you know the work in Hollywood and everything else came together in a form in copywriting. And this is where I'm a little unclear. As I understand it, while you were still on the road to recovery, that's kind of when you launched a business as a copywriter and marketer. Is that correct?
Yeah. So I started studying copywriting on my own in, was it March, I believe? Late March of 2017. I wrote the copy for all the sales pages for all the products that that Mike and I had developed together.
Right.
And then I started working with Jason Capital as a business coach in August of 2017. And he's one of the best email copywriters, email marketers in the world. And in early 2018, I actually started studying specifically email copywriting with him as a means of augmenting, you know, my own business and helping reach more people in my business. And then I came to a realization that, you know, my goal is to transform millions of lives through health and fitness and help millions of people reach their true potential and become the absolute best versions of themselves possible, whatever that looks like for them. And I realized that if I had started A-List Health and Fitness in 2012, 2013, or even 2014, it would probably be a multiple seven-figure business by now. However, at the time I started that business, the health and fitness market is it's the most one of the most sophisticated markets and one of the most saturated markets. Mm-hmm. And I realized I am not going to be able to make the impact that I know I was born to make, that I know I was capable of making through this business. And I thought, if I can use my passions and skill sets to help other already established businesses reach more people, impact more people, change more lives through their existing businesses, I can impact hundreds of thousands, millions of people exponentially quicker and much more effectively than I could through my own business. And so I decided to just go all in on copywriting, particularly email copywriting, for health and fitness businesses. And the rest is kind of history. And I say this now, I think it's probably the best decision that I've ever made.
Well, and like I said, it all kind of comes together. You know, you've got the background in health and fitness, your own personal experiences in the travesty and the things that you learned about that, the stories you told yourself and that you tell your clients, the storytelling that was central to your career in Hollywood as a screenwriter, all coming together in copywriting, along with the impact you wanted to make. But one of the interesting things that I know you've talked to Craig about at Early to Rise here and that I want to get into is some of the struggles you faced as an entrepreneur just getting started. Because this is stuff that a lot of entrepreneurs don't like talking about, in part because I think it makes them feel vulnerable and weak, and they're trying to convey strength to potential clients and prospects and build these networks, these strong networks. So let's dig into some of these if you don't mind talking about them, because I think that they're very interesting and they can be very instructive and helpful for those who are listening. One of the things that you mentioned in previous conversations, not in this interview, is that self-doubt in landing in the copywriting sphere was big, at least at the outset. So my first question is, what did that look like? And then how did you address it? Was the education with Jason Capital a big part of solving that issue?
That's a great question. So one of my coaches had mentioned a term. It's very much real. It very much exists. And if you're an entrepreneur, it doesn't matter if today is the first day starting your business. It doesn't matter if you have a seven-figure business or an eight-figure business. There is such a thing as entrepreneurial depression. One of the things with being an entrepreneur is you are going to be riddled with uncertainty. I mean, that's part of the journey. That's part of the reason why we become entrepreneurs. Like, obviously, primarily, we want to help people. We want to serve people. At the same time, we don't know what's going to happen, right? We don't know if the money's going to come in this month. We don't know where it's going to come from. We don't know how a certain deal is going to go. And there's a lot of kind of roller coasters, if you will, where throughout a day you can go from feeling great to feeling really crummy, or you know, one day to another, you can have a lot of ups and downs. The biggest asset. Most important asset for me in overcoming that is actually one of my best friends, Tyler Ryan. I met Tyler in Jason's coaching program, and he's a brilliant person. He's probably the most intelligent person I've ever encountered in my life. A really great guy, great entrepreneur. But I developed this system for myself where the moment I felt it coming on, I'm just like, oh, here it is. It's back. I would immediately reach out to him. And if he wasn't available right then, I would say, dude, we need to talk as soon as possible. It's back. And he would always, you know, I had some times where I was able to support him. And in return, just because he's a great guy, he would support me whenever I needed it. And we would talk through stuff. And within a matter of minutes, I'd feel, or sometimes even seconds, I would immediately start to feel better. And a lot of times these conversations would turn into hour-long, two-hour conversations. And I remember a specific time at the end of May. It was just after Memorial Day. I was having the greatest month of my life. I was having one of the best weeks of my life. I had a conversation with one of my clients. It wasn't necessarily a bad conversation, but I didn't have a good feeling about it. And immediately, just like that, and it was right before I went, I was visiting my family, my brother in Minnesota. I was just boarding a plane when I had this conversation. So from that point on, while I was in the air and going through the airports and everything, I just felt terrible. And it lasted for a couple of days. And then I talked to him, and within the first 60 seconds, I really started to feel better. So one thing, there's a couple things here. One I will say is just don't give up. Just never. I literally have this and some other numbers that are related to my condition. About a month ago, I got tattooed on my arm. Just never quit. And on top of not quitting, one of the easiest and most effective ways I've found to make sure that you don't quit is that you surround yourself with people who support you. They care about you. They know what you're capable of. They know why you're doing what you're doing. They know where you're going to be at the end. One of the great things about that, one of the many things that I love about Tyler is that he sees things in me that I don't even see in myself. He sees things that are possible for me that I can't see at the time. I'm a very analytical person, so I zoom in on the trees, so to speak, and he can zoom out and show me the forest. So surrounding yourself with those like-minded people and the people who are positive and the people who support you, people hear this all the time. They see this on Facebook. They see this on Instagram from all kinds of entrepreneurs. Your environment, the people you surround yourself with, is the absolute most important thing. You need to edit relationships with people who are negative, who don't support you, who just drag you down. And you need to spend more time with the people who lift you up and show you what's possible for yourself. That's probably the biggest thing to get through that kind of uncertainty and that self-doubt, is to find those people in your life who see the best in you and help bring that out.
You know, at the beginning, I absolutely agree. And I think it's important to remind ourselves of that, regardless of whether you're an entrepreneur or not. When you said that, you know, the first inviolable rule is essentially just don't quit. And one of the ways to ensure that you don't quit is you have that support group. Again, very true. I also feel like a big piece of that is knowing purpose and why. So as long as you can remind yourself of why you're doing what you're doing, then it's a lot easier to say, well, I'm not going to quit today because this is how much I believe in this why, this mission. So one, I guess I would ask, is that true for you? Has that been true for you? And then secondarily, how have you framed that for yourself? How do you keep that always in mind so that quitting is just never an option?
Right. Yeah. So it's definitely part of it for me, right? I'm going to butcher this because it was a while ago I heard this. I believe it was Evan Pagan who said, if you start a business to make money, you're going to fail miserably. If you start a business to create a good product or service, you can do pretty well. If you start a business to make an impact and to change people's lives, there's no limit to the success that you can have. And I feel that that is very true. For me, you know, I know for a fact that I was put here to help people, whether it's through health and fitness, whether it's through growing their business, whether it's through helping them reach more people through health and fitness, whether it's through motivating people, through telling my story. I know that that's why I'm here. And that definitely drives me. And I mentioned it briefly, but about a month and a half, maybe 2 months ago, I got a tattoo on the inside of my arm that says 5'4", never quit, 26-27. So I was diagnosed with CRPS on May 4th, 2017, 5 + 4 + 17 = 26. I was 26 at the time. Literally 1 year later, I had the privilege of speaking at Jason Capital's High Status Summit, May 4th, 2018, which equals 27. I was 27 at the time, as I am now. And never quit is in the middle. And the reason I got this tattoo is to remind myself, I'm looking at it right now, that no matter what you're going through, no matter what kind of difficult times you're having, no matter what kind of hardship might be keeping you from achieving what it is you want to achieve that day, that week, that month. You can always fight through. You can always make it to that other side. So for me, it's kind of like everything that I've been through, really starting a couple of years ago, but really looking at, you know, February 2017 through really now. If you were to tell me 2 years ago that the last 16, 18 months would have happened the way they would, I would have laughed you out of a room because I just wouldn't have believed any of it. But the fact of the matter is every single person on this planet is capable of so much more than they give themselves credit for. And you just need to find those people in those situations and environments that are going to remind you that no matter what you're doing, no matter what you're going through, there's always going to be a light at the end of the tunnel. It just might take you a little bit longer to get there or find it in some situations than others. But as long as you have those pieces in place, the right people, the right environment, that right mindset, there's nothing that you can't achieve.
I can't think of a better way to end the podcast, the interview, than on that note. Of course, I have other questions, but Sam, maybe we can come back to them in round two at some point, further down the entrepreneurial journey for you. We didn't get to any of my conversation on copywriting, but that's totally fine because I think there's a lot to take from your personal story, experiences you had, the hardships you suffered. It's very instructive and inspiring for our listeners. So I will leave it there. But before I do, before we close out, I definitely want to give our listeners a chance to follow up and learn more about you and what you're doing in the copywriting world. So what's the best way for them to reach out?
Yeah, the best way to reach me is probably on Instagram at thesamrobson, thesamrobson. Just send me a direct message if there's any way that I can help. I'm more than happy to.
And I will say too, on your website, which is just samrobson.com, is that right?
It's samrobsonmarketing.com.
Sam Robson Marketing. You do have some examples of emails that you've put together. So if folks want a sense of how you're using some of your storytelling ability in the copywriting world, specifically email copywriting, there's some great examples on there. And I encourage all the listeners to take a look at that as well if they have some time. And like I said, hopefully we'll get back together at some point and talk about how all of that's going for you and creating new stories as your journey unfolds. Sam, thank you so much for taking the time. Guys, check him out on Instagram. Anything else you want to plug before we close it out?
No, just basically everything that we talked about, Jeff. You know, no matter what it is that you're going through, no matter what stage you're in your journey, trust me, I speak from personal experience on many levels. There is a light at the end of the tunnel. You need to keep pushing. You need to keep going. And you need to surround yourself with those people who are going to show you what is truly possible for yourself, because you're going to achieve things that you never thought were possible. And it's simply a matter of not giving up and surrounding yourself with those positive, like-minded people.
Words of wisdom. It'll end up on a t-shirt someday, I'm sure.
Hopefully.
No, hopefully. T-shirts mean something like that. Sam, thanks again. And we'll hope to have you back on the show sometime soon.
Thanks so much, Jeff.
Thank you, Sam, for taking time to talk today and for being willing to share such personal and vulnerable stories. Big, big takeaways for me. And I hope his experiences will give you tremendous insight as you shape your own dreams, goals, and the future ahead. I'd love to hear what you think about today's show, of course, and how you're inspired by Sam's message. So send me an email at support@earlytorise.com. You can also send Craig Ballantyne a message on Instagram. He's very active there. His handle is RealCraigBallantyne, or you can go on Twitter, send him a tweet. Craig Ballantyne is his handle. Thanks for listening to Early to Rise Radio today. Please head over to iTunes, rate today's show, and share it with your friends. Don't forget, build your belief system, own your life, and never stop learning. See you next time.